Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 168 of Left If Skeptic. My name is Brittany Lind.
And I am Kayla Moria.
And we are a paranormal podcast.
Yes, we are.
Kayla.
Hi.
You have yet another person sitting next to you.
So many people have sat next to me on this couch this month. Today, we have the inimitable Chad Brown, a.k.a. Sea Silence. Hi, Chad. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm happy to be here.
So, Chad. Oh, yep.
Thank you.
Chad Solo is Sea Silence, but is also a member of Boogeymen and has been a member of many other projects aside from that. Mm-hmm. Chad, how many homegrowns have you been a part of?
You know, I never really counted, but I want to say probably at least 10.
Yep, it seems to be the common thread when we've asked that. Everybody's like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I guess a lot. Because before you, we had Corey.
Right.
And then we had Brianne. And we had
Abe.
Yes,
my bandmate.
So before we go ahead and get started and get too distracted, why don't you tell us what you have in store for Homegrown this year?
So, Boogeyman is playing Thursday at the Earthrider Fest Grounds, and that's going to be from 10:30, I believe, right before the Fire Spinners. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but you should be there anyways, even if I am wrong. And then Sea Silence Friday, Dublin's, and that's for sure at 10:30.
Nice.
But if I recall correctly, there's going to be some new music.
Yes.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Boogeyman is releasing an album, 5-3. During Homegrown, it's going to be called Graveyard Shift.
Which nice. Is so fitting. So fitting.
I think we have the stickers for it downstairs.
I saw the Boogeyman stickers sitting down there. I'm sure Willie dropped them off.
Yeah.
Libby made sure I left brunch with a poster to put up
Fun.
For the show, too.
The homie right there, always helping us out.
Get the word out. So, before we get started and we get really kicked into gear.
Yes.
You want to hear some jokes?
Let's hear the jokes.
Def.
What is a Spectre's favorite ride?
Hmm.
A roller coaster.
Okay.
What is a vampire's favorite fruit?
A blood orange.
That's better than the answer. The answer was nectarines, but blood orange is better.
Same page. Right here.
A nectarine. Okay.
Okay.
Should we crack into it?
Let's crack into it.
I already cracked. I'm sorry, y'all.
That's okay.
I'll
flick my cap.
I'll flick my cap. Also, I just feel compelled to tell this story. So I've known Chad for probably close to 10 years now. We met at a local Duluth happening called the Rock and Roll Kamikaze, where we got partnered into or like put into a big group together. And Heiko puts it on every year. It's super duper fun. And so I just realized that, yeah, we're probably about 10 years of friendship. That's always fun and nice.
Aww.
Just because our names got drawn out of a box.
Yep. And it was a tough composition, but I think we came out on top of that one, didn't we?
We were second place that year, but still.
I mean, that's pretty good.
We got to perform Break Stuff by Limp Bizkit together.
Yes,
nothing will ever top that.
Reunion show.
Didn't we remake Fancy?
Yes, we did Fancy, and then you threw in a verse because we made it I'm So Fertile.
I'm So Fertile. That's the new title.
Because Chad has really kids. Bad.
But it was really true, probably.
Okay, so first up this week, I'm going to tell y'all about Wyoming Frontier Prison. And if it sounds familiar, it's because apparently a lot of these old-ass prisons have a lot of the same storylines going into them. Located at 500 West Walnut Street in Rawlins, Wyoming's first state penitentiary, now known as Wyoming Frontier Prison, had its cornerstone laid in 1888. Due to funding issues and the super fun Wyoming weather, it took 13 years to complete. In December of 1901, the prison opened, consisting of 104 cells that make up cell block A. It had no electricity, no running water, and a very crappy, inadequate heating system.
Yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds about right. Wait, it took 14 years to complete?
13.
13?
Yeah. Well,
dang. What year was this?
1888 is when it started.
Okay.
Huh. You'd think that they would have done what the other prisons did and just made the prisoners build their own cells.
Yeah, that's
very common.
It was super common, apparently. But wow. No, the big hang-up seemed to have been the fact that they were in the mountainous area of Wyoming and the weather sucked, so it took forever. It quickly became where the surrounding areas sent most of their violent criminals, as well as others convicted of lesser crimes. They were transferred often from the prison that already existed in Laramie. So almost right away, the prison became completely overcrowded, like from the get-go. A contributing factor to consider is that at the time, Wyoming was still very, like, old west, wild frontier land. So, like, that was the area it was. So, by the opening of the prison, the criminal justice system was cranked up a notch to clean out the criminals doing their killings, robberies, and various other, like, old west-style misdeeds.
Yep. Hmm.
Their goal was to civilize Wyoming.
I don't know if they've done that even yet.
I guess I don't know enough about
it. I mean, they're probably wilding out there.
Yeah.
I'm sure they are.
Wild in Wyoming? That's a good band name.
But you'd have to be from Wyoming. Otherwise, you're kind of like stealing their thunder a little bit.
Yeah, you can't do that.
So we'll form a band chat and it'll be Messing with Minnesota.
I like it. Messy Minnesota.
Messy Minnesota. That's accurate, actually. The concept of reform at this time was to break the spirits of hardened criminals and force conformity with the hope that the criminals would conform to society's rules, because that definitely works, and breaking people's spirits is always the move. It's never backfired ever in the world.
Yes, scared straight. Very scared. Effective.
It's an episode of Maury up in here.
Like, I mean, it's kind of the way the, you know, government system is kind of built. So.
Yeah. From the get-go, this was kind of their plan.
Yep.
They have not learned anything in the last 100-something years.
A lot of years. In 1904, the first of several additions to the penitentiary was completed, adding 32 cells to the west of cell block A. In 1906, a dungeon house, their words, not mine, a dungeon house was finished to house the most difficult of their prisoners. Violent inmates were put there to try to punish them into submission in an effort to improve the prison's atmosphere and discipline system. While this step of moving the most disturbed men out of the general population was a welcomed improvement, much more was needed to keep control of the inmates, which were considered a, quote, rowdy and unpredictable lot, unquote. Throughout the history of the prison's operation, 11 women were incarcerated there. Women were not segregated from Gen Pop.
What?
Wow.
Some of these women were transferred from the Laramie prison.
Yeah.
Where they did have separate cells, but they just kept them in general population with the.
That is awful.
Yeah. They were eventually like, hey, maybe this is a bad idea, and stopped housing women in the prison by 1909. The last woman to be held prisoner there was transferred to Colorado in 1909 because they were like, yeah, no, this isn't working.
No, that's got to be like fucking torture.
Weapons on occasion were smuggled into the prison. A guard named Ed Samuelson was killed when he was shot by an inmate, also armed with dynamite, that was trying to escape in 1907.
You know, just casually getting some dynamite in the prison.
Too easy.
Too easy. Inmates had begun escaping the prison as early as 1903, so just 2 years after it opened. An escape attempt was foiled in 1911 at the price of another guard's life. In 1912 alone, 30 prisoners escaped through the wooden stockade and barbed wire on two consecutive days, some of whom killed a Rollin resident, before they finally put up concrete towers in 1915 and, like, concrete towers and walls.
Okay, this place took 13 years to build, and they did so ineffectively.
They took 13 years to build and another 13 years to make it actually secure.
What are you guys doing over there in Wild Wyoming?
Wild Wyoming.
Truly unbelievable. Long.
They added a second cell block known as Cell Block C in 1950 to again help relieve the overcrowding issue, which is still an issue in many prisons.
I'm going to go ahead and say all.
I guess I don't know enough, but probably. You're probably close to correct, or correct in general. The addition of cell block C also brought the prison's first set of solitary confinement cells, hot running water, and a better heating system. Though the hot running water was only for the addition of cell block C, hot running water would not be added to the original cell block for another 28 years. That's right. Cell block A did not have hot running water until the late 1970s.
What?
So this is over 70 years of the prison's operation where they did not have hot running water.
Okay, do not get arrested in Wyoming. Their prison system is real bad, apparently, even worse than the average.
It's probably when it starts raining, they're like, all right, guys, go get your shower in.
Go get your shower in.
Grab your bar of soap. Let's go. A maximum security addition to cell block C was completed in 1966, but the addition only included 36 cells and was reserved for serious discipline cases. Over the 80-year operation, the prison produced goods to meet demands of four major industries. From 1901 through 1917, they had a broom factory.
Okay.
They just made brooms. But the inmates burned it down during a riot. The factory was rebuilt and operated as a shirt factory for a few years. Then in 1934, a federal law was passed to prohibit the sale and transportation of prison manufactured goods from one state to another. They were trying to, from what I can understand, prevent them from using prisons as like mass manufacturing throughout the United States.
Okay.
So they lost significant revenue when that happened. But even just the next year, it just amped right back up again, because in 1935, the factory began operating as a woolen mill, which won the Navy E, which was a battle effectiveness award, in 1942 for the superior quality blankets produced by the prison for military during the World War II. Oh. So all these laws they created just kind of went out the door when they're like, oh, we have a world war. Mm. So that's off the table. The blankets.
Just kidding. You guys can make all our blankets.
No brooms anymore.
No brooms.
No brooms. They're way too flammable.
No brooms, no shirts, just blankets. In 1949, the prison changed production one last time, producing license plates until the penitentiary closed in 1981. Throughout the prison's operation from 1901 to 1981, approximately 13,500 people were incarcerated there.
Jesus.
Overcrowding was an almost constant concern. Approximately 200 people died there during that time period, most from executions and brutal inmate violence. Because again, even throughout the time, this was a place they sent some of the rougher cases. After serving as a prison for 80 years, the building closed its doors and sat abandoned until 1987, when a low-budget movie titled Prison was filmed on the location. Hashtag fun fact, the movie Prison was one of Viggo Mortensen's first films, our very own Aragorn.
Got his
start at the Wyoming State Penitentiary for the movie Prison.
Huh.
It was a horror movie about a convict that is executed via electric chair for a murder he did not commit. They did not use the electric chair at Wyoming State Penitentiary, but that's a whole other thing. The prison was closed, but then the dead convict's soul returns from the afterlife to take revenge and goes on a killing spree when the prison is reopened after 30 years.
Oh, okay. Okay. Is this where life imitates art now?
Yeah, but it yes and no. It's definitely haunted.
Okay.
But no Viggo Mortensen, as far as I can tell.
No. Okay. The rest of the plot is right on. Just no Viggo.
Just no Viggo.
Okay. Too fancy of a name, I guess.
It's Wyoming. They need a
Buck.
Buck.
I don't know why Buck was the name I went.
Jimmy.
Significant damage was done to the prison grounds during filming because it had yet to be considered a historic site, so it was like free reign, do whatever you want to the area. In 1988, a joint powers board assumed ownership of it and dubbed it the Wyoming Frontier Prison and established it as a museum. The Wyoming Frontier Prison has since been listed on the National Registry of Historic Places and offers tours to approximately 15,000 visitors annually. Some of the more famous inmates include Annie Baker. For those who don't know, Annie Baker
on March 20th of 1907 was a 14-year-old resident of Wyoming, and she was in her family's kitchen baking 5 pies. All the pies she baked were fine, except for one, where she purposefully poured a bottle of strychnine, also known as rat poison, into the 5th pie. Quote, "While I was in the act of making the pies, a feeling or a wish came over me to kill someone, and this feeling I could not resist," unquote.
All right.
I guess she was really a baker.
Later that afternoon, Annie and her mother were making lunch for her father, and Annie's mother asked her to get a pie from the cupboard for his lunch. And fully knowing which pie she was grabbing, she put the poisoned pie into his lunch. As soon as her father, James, age 43, took 3 bites of the pie, he instantly felt stomach pains. He died shortly after. Some of the poison had gone into his liver and stomach, and the amount of poison left was sufficient enough to kill 5 men, according to the reports.
Okay, so if any of your children make you any pies,
right,
at least just be cautious.
Just be cautious.
My kids like me.
Oh, that's good. Oh, that's well, we don't know if Annie didn't like her dad. It seems like she just wanted to kill someone.
I really wonder the backstory of that. Like,
right,
there was some dark, deep stuff in the background.
I'm gonna say there had to have been some dark, deep stuff because, like, she could have given the pie to a stranger, but she was like, "Nah, Dad's lunch is getting packed.
Daddy, I made you some pie.
It's delicious. You'll love it."
Annie was the first woman or girl in this case because she was 14, but at that.
Oh, my God. With all the grown men in the gen pop?
In the early 1900s, 14 was often considered women, which, well, that's a whole other. Bleh. But Annie was the first woman ever convicted of any degree of murder in Wyoming, and she was the last woman to be held at Wyoming Frontier Prison. She was the one that was transferred in 1909 to Colorado.
Oh, okay.
She was discharged from the prison in Colorado at age 18. They also held Henry Edmondson. Henry was sentenced to life imprisonment for the crime of murder. He apparently did not approve of his daughter's relationship with one of his ranch hands, and so he killed the ranch hand. He was 40 years old when he entered his life sentence and was listed as a heavy drinker and a morphine fiend. He's interesting because during his stay at Wyoming Frontier Prison, he did his best to make life as difficult as he could. One example was he refused to work. They kept trying to make him work in the broom factory, and he would just take the broomsticks and then go disappear back to his cell. And then he'd get locked in the dungeon for a while until they felt he'd learned his lesson, and then send him back, and then he would just repeat the same thing till eventually he stopped trying. There was also another story about him.
Okay.
What was he doing with these broomsticks?
He'd just take the broomstick like he was going to go make a broom and then would dip.
I don't think he was sweeping the floor.
No. I just keep thinking of, like witches.
Yeah.
And how originally brooms are associated with witches because they were, like, the earliest form of dildos.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Or maybe he was trying to enchant the broomstick so he could fly out of the prison.
One of those.
Turns out he would not need that broomstick, and we'll get to that in a second.
Uh-oh.
Another story was that he grew a full beard, and the warden commanded it be shaved, and he said, quote, "Well, I will have to be put in that chair by force, and I don't doubt there are enough guards to do it. But if you shave me, there is one thing certain, you will never shave another man," unquote. And he was taken back to his cell without a shave. He was the only man there with a full beard. When they searched his cell, they found a huge club made from hardwood and a 10-inch butcher knife with its edge ground down to razor sharpness.
Jesus.
So apparently we don't fuck with Edmondson.
No.
On December 22nd of 1915, Edmondson was pardoned by Governor John K. Kendrick. He was the only person to be pardoned on the account of his bad behavior rather than good. Basically, his pardon came with a condition that he leave the state of Wyoming and absolutely never come back. You're another state's problem. Get the fuck out.
That's dirty. While in Wyoming.
While in Wyoming. And then another inmate was Melville Davis. In 1912, 20-year-old Melville had recently moved in with his sister's family, and he had tried to kiss his 13-year-old niece after being warned by his sister Annie to leave her alone.
What the fuck, bro?
When the girl broke away on his second attempt and told her mother, Annie scolded Melville severely. Melville ran into a bedroom to retrieve a gun, pointed it at Annie and her daughter, and pulled the trigger, but the gun misfired, so neither of them were hurt in that incident. Annie yelled at her daughter to run, and shortly she was followed by Annie and Melville. The girl looked back to see Melville strike Annie with what she thought was a board, but it was not. It was an axe, and she was killed. The following day, a letter arrived at the house addressed to Annie from her father, warning her that Melville had recent actions of setting fire to the boarding house he had lived in and to watch out and be alert for trouble. But obviously, that was one day too late. What the fuck? A manhunt began looking for him. They found him, and he was sentenced to life in prison for second-degree murder. His, quote, mundane existence, unquote, in the prison was pretty, pretty unremarkable. He was just another inmate. But he did constantly state that he wished to kill himself, and then one day he committed suicide by jumping off the railing to the cement floor, striking his head, which caused his death in the prison.
I'm not too particularly sad about that.
Neither am I.
Doesn't sound like a good person.
Nope.
Nope.
So these are just like a few of the ideas of like what kind of inmates they had mm-hmm. there. The prison was equipped with several different means of disciplining inmates throughout its operation, including the dungeon house, as we talked about, which prior to them having like solitary confinement was where they put people. And then they had a punishment pole where they would strap men to it and whip them with rubber hoses. The prison also eventually became a place for execution and used different execution methods. The first two executions were carried out using the traveling Julian gallows, which were used to hang Tom Horn and Cheyenne in 1903. In 1916, the penitentiary completed the addition of its own death house, which had six cells to house inmates on death row. A unique indoor version of the Julian gallows, which I thought was like, they were like, oh yeah, it was unique. I'm like, yeah, it's a place you hung people.
So it's a gallows, but it's inside.
Yeah. Yep.
Cool.
The building also eventually added on a gas chamber, and that was their primary way of executing people. Ultimately, 14 death sentences were carried out. 9 men were hanged, 5 were executed in the gas chamber. And that means that of the 200 deaths that we talked about, most of them were from inmate violence. According to Travel Wyoming, Tina Hill, which is the director of the Wyoming Frontier Prison, said, quote, "We've been told by numerous paranormal investigators that our prison has so much activity that it is difficult to pull any one spirit out of the pack. Every paranormal investigation that we hold here comes up with some evidence. So I just tell everyone that we are officially haunted," unquote. Hill goes on to add, "Over the years, we've had numerous anecdotal stories of guests and staff being touched on the shoulders or back, hair being tugged, hearing footsteps, whistling, voices, hearing your name being called, cell doors opening and closing, windows rattling, benches being moved, and small items being misplaced and then found. In prisoner cell blocks, oftentimes apparitions are seen out of the corners of visitors' eyes. In various cells throughout cell blocks, unseen presences are felt and disembodied voices are heard. In the execution house, some sensitive visitors have felt an increase of pressure on the chest and a feeling of anxiety as they climb the steps into the house. A reflection of an apparition of a man wearing a brimmed hat was seen in the room where the men were executed by the gallows contraption."
Mm-hmm.
"Tour guides have frequently heard footsteps in and around the gas chamber area of the prison. The ghostly phenomena of orbs have been sighted and recorded, as well as EVPs. EVPs have ranged anywhere from 'help me' all the way to an unseen entity saying 'give me a cigarette.'"
That one's a little less upsetting than the "help me."
Yeah. But they're like, "give me a cigarette." I'm like, all right. Well, you can't smoke in prisons now. So it's definitely old.
I'd want a cigarette if I was in prison.
Absolutely.
I mean, I wouldn't. I have asthma. And so I would be, I would just be terribly uncomfortable.
According to a few sources, one of the most chilling places in the main building is the prison shower room. Voices emanate from the darkened shower room and often have one thinking that people in there are having a conversation, only to find that there is nobody in there. Equally disturbing is the fact that wet footprints have been spotted on the tile floor despite no water being run in the shower room at all.
Which is worse, dying and living your eternity at work, or being in prison and live your eternity taking a shower?
Well, damn it. I was like, being in prison, obviously, but you're just talking about just the shower.
Yeah.
I mean, I do love a shower. I love a good shower.
But they didn't have hot water.
Yeah, then we're going to say the shower is worse. We're going to say shower is worse. I can deal with angry customers all day long. I can do that.
You know, cold showers actually are kind of rejuvenating sometimes, so maybe I'd pick the shower.
Just, for all eternity, you're just like be, cold water.
You don't want to be like
I'm sitting up in there like Wim Hof the whole time. I'm just like...
I feel, to me, it's like one of the circles of Dante's, like, hell. It's like when you're thirsty, so the guy tries to get the water, but every time he bends down to get the water to drink, it goes down. And then there's food above him, and every time he goes to that, it raises above him. That would be, I think the cold shower would be my version of, like, of a forever hell.
Every time you go to step into a shower and think it's going to be warm water, but it's just cold. I don't do cold showers unless it is very hot outside.
Usually I only do cold showers when somebody forgets to, like, pull that little plug on the shower, and then you get in there and you turn it on, you're like, oh my goodness.
See, I'm a big proponent of turn the water on first. And then feel it, and then be like, okay, now I'm going to climb in.
They do have some idea of who some of these ghosts may be. Andrew Pixley may be one of them. He was responsible for the slaying of a circuit court judge's children.
Oh.
And he was sentenced to death as a result. He went on to receive the title of the longest to die by gas chamber.
No.
Apparently, when they tried to kill him by gas chamber, it lasted nearly 7 minutes, and he was laughing the entire time. When people go into the gas chamber area, candle lights placed inside have been known to flicker intensely, emit a glowing light, go out completely, and then relight.
Like Practical Magic.
This is not nearly as cutesy as Practical Magic. This
that's
sounds
true.
Way creepier.
Yeah, that's true.
This is not Sandra Bullock. This is...
going, and making a candle come on.
Of all things, a black cat has been known to just show up inside the prison and has been spotted coming and going from Pixley's cell and execution chamber. This chamber is where people have claimed to hear ghostly laughter picked up during ghost hunting sessions, as well as the crying of young females. They believe the laughter is Pixley, and somehow maybe the crying is the weeping of the daughters of that circuit judge.
Or it could be the weeping of the women that they put into Gen Pop.
Another ghostly apparition does not involve a ghost, but rather many ghosts. While in operation, there was a local woman who visited the prison frequently. She brought fresh baked pies, not poisoned.
I was going to say.
Just pies. And she visited the prisoners. Basically, so she was a spiritual woman who was trying to help, like, give, like, a message of love and reform the prisoners, saying, you know, like, God loves you. Please, like, do your best. Well, when you get out of here, like, do that. Like, she was just trying to help.
Here's some pie.
She was pretty universally loved by the inmates. She was a welcome, warm presence. One prisoner named Frank Wigfall took a particular liking to the woman known as the Pie Lady. And when he was released from prison, he tracked her down to her home, assaulted and killed her. He was caught, arrested, and returned back to the penitentiary, the exact same prison. And he was not welcomed back because they knew what happened.
You can't kill the Pie Lady and just get away with it.
That's dirty.
Yeah.
Wigfall was instantly hated by all of the inmates who enjoyed the pies and the cheer that the Pie Lady spread. Wigfall was hung with a rope by a small group of prisoners over the side of the upper walkway in a form of justice for the Pie Lady. Since then, prisoners, prison guards, because this was like before it was turned into a museum, prisoners, prison guards, and paranormal investigators and guests have seen an image and an apparition where half a dozen spirits execute a spirit that they believe to be Wigfall by hanging it by a rope in full view. Some stories from visitors to the prison from hauntedplaces.org, which is where we get a lot of our stories because people Basically, you can just type a location in there and see if people have had haunted experiences there. Gina Fletcher said, I was a young girl when my parents took me there and my older brother on a tour of the prison. I remember turning around a corner and watching a man in one of the cells. When the man was hanging there, I was in shock, but out of everyone on the tour, I was the only one who saw it. As I continued to walk through the prison, I felt as if somebody was walking behind me. But when I turned, I saw a black cat walking the opposite direction, which combines with the Pixley story of the black cat being present there.
And I love a ghostly kitty. I'm never going to be upset about that.
Ghost pets.
Ghost pets.
Another user named Mark said, in 1989, I was on the tour with my then girlfriend and her daughter. I was on the gas chamber chair for a photo when I felt something grab my shoulder while I was sitting there. In the photo, you can see a hand and arm shaped by mist above my shoulder that was grabbed. Ended up having a big fight with my girlfriend on that trip, and we broke up shortly after we got home. She had the photo, unfortunately, AKA saying, I don't have this photo, so don't ask me for proof.
It happened, but...
It happened, but I don't have proof of it. And that is the story of the haunted Wyoming Frontier Prison in Rawlins, Wyoming.
You know, that really goes against the picture, it didn't happen.
Yeah. Picture, it didn't happen. Well, I don't have the picture. My girlfriend broke up with me.
Right? It's like, hell no, you can't have that picture.
Like, how bad was the fight? Couldn't you just text me like, but could you send me that last picture, though? I need it.
People online think I'm lying.
Just turns out, because that was in 89. You're like... And he posted this story in 2015. Are you telling me that the blood was so bad that you couldn't just ask her for the picture? Like, this many years later, you couldn't just be like, dude, but seriously, do you still have that picture?
Because I need it. It's been like 15 years. 25 years.
She said it got waterlogged. It got
ruined. So now we rate the stories on a skeptic scale of para to normal. Para being 5, normal being 1, on how believable you think it is that this place is haunted. So, Brittany, on a skeptic scale, what do you think?
I am going to say I think it's a 3.5. I think it's likely haunted. 200 pretty much people dying in pretty terrible ways.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that's just asking. It's just asking for some ghosts.
I was going to go with a 3 because, again, I fully believe that it's haunted, but also there was a very big lack of, like, I often look for, like, formal paranormal investigations and stuff, and the only thing I could, they said several times, like, oh, whenever paranormal investigations come up, but I couldn't find any official reports from paranormal investigations, except for the show that shall not be named. So.
I have to go right down the middle. I'm going 2.5 because
okay.
I feel like no matter where you go, it could be haunted. Like, you know, we've all had that chill in the back of our neck. But like, I mean, the stories of, you know, where's the evidence?
Yep, exactly. All right. So we've got a pretty strong middle ground on this one.
Yeah, with a 3.5, a 2.5, and a 3.
We're like,
we are a 3.
We're like, we would be creeped out by going there and hope to find something, but we wouldn't necessarily think we're guaranteed anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, real quick, Brittany, before I see what you got for me.
Uh-huh.
We've got one more code word.
Oh, right.
This week's code word is festival. So, if you are listening and you submit a DM.
Jen's just laughing at you.
Well, I'm laughing because... we printed all the boogeyman flyers, and they say festival because they didn't put an S in it. So festival happens to be the word. I'm like, maybe Kayla's putting a little like spell your words right. Yep.
If you wanna make me giggle, put festival, but I will still give you credit if you spell it wrong.
In fact, you get an extra point if you put festival.
No extra entries for festival, but come to our festival. Duluth Hongra music festival. DM us the word festival on Instagram or Facebook, and you will be entered for a chance to win a week-long pass to the Duluth Homegrown Music Festival. That is a $40 value, y'all. And then we'll do the drawing on the 26th. Make sure you listen to the previous episodes as well, because when Those you can do one of each, so you can get four potential entries, and then we'll do that drawing on the 26th, and everything will be great. And we love you all. And Brittany, what do you got for us this week?
That was so smooth.
I'm the smoothest.
And we love you all. And Brittany, it's your turn now. Brittany, talk now.
Sometimes you want to come up with segues, and sometimes you're not good at it. So you roll with what you got.
All right. Well, last week when we had Corey on, I told the story of the cursed movie Rosemary's Baby. Did you ever listen to last week's episode?
I started it, but I was not able to finish it.
That's
I'm
okay.
I'm definitely going to finish it after this because now I'm really intrigued.
Have you seen Rosemary's Baby?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
All right.
Basically, the idea of just like listen to the stories, but the idea being that the people who worked on the show were cursed or on the movie were cursed after the movie came out.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So the setting of Rosemary's Baby took place in the fictional building, the Bramford, and that exterior shots from the Bramford were actually of New York City's very real building called the Dakota. And as I mentioned, the Dakota has its own stories of hauntings and unfortunate events that not only potentially add to the validity of the cursed movie, but as well to a story in and of itself.
All right, so the Dakota.
The Dakota. Yes, so that, my friends, is what I'm going to talk to you about today. The Dakota, a.k.a. the Dakota Apartments.
Oh, so it's an apartment. I was like, I'm in here plotting, like, okay, the next time I go to see a Broadway movie, I'll go stay at the Dakota, but it's apartments. So never mind.
Good luck, man.
I'm not renting an apartment.
You would never be able to rent at the Dakota.
Is it spendy?
Let me tell you about the Dakota.
Are any of the American Horror Stories based off of any of that stuff? Or
oh, that's such a good question.
Because
I don't know.
I've watched them all, and I'm like just having like a flashback of something, and maybe I'm thinking of a different hotel, but maybe
the one you're thinking of is the season with Hotel
Murder Hotel. Or,
yeah, that's based off of the Cecil in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay, I was like, I knew it was some California based.
Yeah, that one's opposite coast, but equally as fucking creepy.
You don't know. You don't even know my story yet, Kayla.
I'm going to say, based on the tone of your voice, I've gotten good at rating your tone. This is going to be creepy. I'm
okay.
Here for it. I'm
all
ready.
All right, good. Good, good, good. All right, so the Dakota, an apartment building on the Upper West Side of Manhattan in New York City, began construction in 1880. It was commissioned by an American lawyer and co-founder of the Singer Sewing Machine Company, Edward...
I love Singers.
Cabot Clark.
I have a Singer Rocketeer from 1960s. I love it.
Oh, damn.
It's great.
Does it still work?
Yeah.
Awesome.
It was my great grandma's. Now it's mine. Buy Singer sewing machines, people. Do you sew? Buy a Singer.
The co-founder helped build the Dakota. Reason enough. See, full circle.
Full circle.
Kayla loves Singer sewing machines. She also loves ghosts. The co-founder created a haunted apartment building.
This is free pub. We are not sponsored by Singer.
Oh my God. Can you imagine if we got Singer as a sponsor? It would be so confusing.
We'll become a craft and ghost podcast.
Like, it would probably start with some kind of commercial for Singer. Like, buy yourself a Singer.
Yeah. Okay, but you have to do the commercial because I can't do it that way. Buy yourself a Singer.
Chad's was better. I'm sorry.
I know. That's what I'm saying. So it was commissioned by this guy who Kayla knows and loves. And it was designed by esteemed architect Henry Janeway Hardenberg, who was known as a, quote, master of a new building form, the skyscraper, as well as the man who designed the Waldorf Astoria and the Plaza Hotel. Just to give you an idea of the level of fancy that this man was working with.
Peak fancy.
Peak classic New York fancy.
One could say they're so fancy, you already know.
Hopefully not as fertile as I am. I've been doing good. My youngest kid is 9 now, so good job.
9 man. Years.
Yep.
Good.
Holding it together.
It was designed in the German Renaissance style, though many of my sources mentioned that it is an eclectic combination of various styles popular at the time, with a steep roof, dormer windows, and corner pavilions. It was one of the first large developments on the Upper West Side and is the oldest remaining luxury apartment building in New York City. It's actually very interesting because you look at pictures of it now and it's just big old beautiful building in the center of the city. But when it was first built, they thought that maybe it was called the Dakotas because it was like really far out there. Like there was nothing near it.
Like along with my theory that nobody actually lives in the Dakotas. It's just a lie. Like they're saying like that's how far out it's like the Dakota states.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. When
the- I think that nobody lives in the Dakotas. So that's
well, I have a buddy who's like his theme for his little thing. He like puts like local artists on and it's Dakota, North Dakota doesn't exist or something.
So I'm not the only one with this theory.
And he lives there, supposedly.
That's a lie.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Great allegedly. Dude, by the way. His name happens to be Dakota. Shouts out, my homie.
What?
Shout out as many people as you want. Absolutely.
Dakota throw some shit out there. Lives in Dakota.
Yeah.
Supposedly.
Mm-hmm. Allegedly. When the building reached completion in 1884, it boasted 65 units. With anywhere between 4 and 20 rooms per apartment.
That's too many rooms in an apartment. Just buy a goddamn house.
Right?
I suppose it is New York.
There was nothing in that area. They could have built their own apartment building with 20 rooms and been totally fine.
Well, it's New York. They have to put as many apartments they can in there and then charge ridiculous rates for to live there.
Yeah, they do.
Yep.
They do. I assure you.
Brittany's about to smash any dream I have of living in New York.
at least not the Dakota.
I know people that moved out there that live like a small apartment with two other people. Like it's ridiculous. I would never want to.
No, I wouldn't either. Yeah. If you could afford to live in a place like the Dakota, I mean, okay.
Our podcast would have other people do our research for us.
Yes, yes, yes.
I mean,
let's
be real. I would move to somewhere in like the Dakotas, actually, and then nobody would live there, so I'd have like all this room for myself.
You could just have a bunch of land.
Yeah.
You could build your own recording studio.
We'll just build Cobb houses out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to live in the Dakotas.
Studio.
No, neither do I.
It's not a good place for women.
I've heard stories.
Yeah.
And I've driven through there.
It's pretty boring. There are no trees, at least in South Dakota. I've really only ever been to South Dakota, and there are very few trees, unless you get to, like, the Black Hills.
But Buffalo. We're getting really sidetracked. Apartments.
Yeah. So the Dakota was designed to be fireproof, with the foundation walls being made out of bluestone blocks that measured 3 to 4 feet thick. And with perimeter walls, floor slabs, and partitions of concrete and other material ranging from 6 to 12 inches thick, the building was also quite soundproof as well. It had a central courtyard, a garden, tennis and croquet courts, and a mechanical plant containing electrical generators, steam boilers, and steam engines, which not only served the Dakota, but also a row of houses nearby. It also had a dining room, a florist, a messenger's office, and a telegraph's office for residents, and in-house staff, including a house manager, doorman, chambermaids, janitors, hall servants, and repairmen. Plus, each tenant had an average of about 3 servants that they employed by themselves, though it could be as many as 5, which I assume was most likely for the 20-room apartments.
Legit.
In summary, this place was fancy AF.
Rich people.
Mm-hmm. Rich people indeed. Unfortunately, Edward Cabot Clark, co-founder of Singer, died 2 years before the building was completed, and he bequeathed the apartment complex to his eldest grandson, Edward Clark, who was 12 years old at the time. So, like the epitome of generational wealth. At 12 years old, he just inherited a fancy apartment building. By its completion in October of 1884, the building was fully rented to some of New York's industry elites, with residents including lawyers, brokers, merchants, and clothiers, all of whom were ultra wealthy.
Not just wealthy, ultra wealthy.
Ultra wealthy.
They did not need or want for anything.
They did not. They had 20 rooms, and I bet they didn't even have anyone to put in them. The servants actually stayed on a different floor, so it's not as if it was live-in servants.
Oh, really?
So, yes.
Wow. Jesus.
I know.
Like, you I'm can't done with you. Go to your other floor right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, go
to
your other
room. You can't stay in my 20-room apartment. Go back down to bottom floor.
And although the original occupants were not known to be particularly famous, over the years and throughout many iterations of the building, such as sectioning off some of the larger apartments into smaller ones and converting things like the on-site stables into apartments as well, it eventually became a cooperative apartment complex with a flair of the arts, or at least people associated with the arts. Some of the famous people who have resided at the Dakota include composer Leonard Bernstein, Rosemary Clooney, George Clooney's aunt and a singer and actress in her own right, Roberta Flack, Judy Garland, John Lennon and Yoko Ono, Paul Simon, actress Judy Holliday, and Boris Karloff, just to name a few.
I'm going to ask you to remove Judy Garland from that list because we claim her here. That's a Minnesota thing.
She just spent a very brief time there.
We claim Judy Garland. No other No other state gets her.
Per a 1996 article in New York Magazine, many brokers classified the Dakota as one of five top-tier apartment buildings on Central Park West, largely because of its residence, large scale, and historical prestige. And the Dakota Co-op Board, which decides whether to allow prospective tenants, has a reputation for selectivity, requiring a several thousand dollar background check and several years worth of financial and tax documentation to even be considered. This is where your dreams get dashed.
Ready to die. Let's go.
Some of the folks who did not make the cut for the Dakota include Gene Simmons, Billy Joel, Cher, Madonna, Melanie Griffith and Antonio Banderas, and Judd Apatow.
I mean, for the start of that list, so we're just cutting off, like, major music royalty. We're like, this music royalty, not good enough.
Not good enough. No. Maury Povich is a resident.
Fucking Maury! It all comes back. I
know you
did.
I know
earlier.
You did. I know there. You did. He's out there. He's, you know. And I
the
don't.
The time comes where we figure out that Chad is the father.
No, I'm not. Yes, I am.
Of many
Sorry, Maury.
Children.
I didn't mean to.
And I don't know why those folks were denied. I mean, I guess maybe question mark Gene Simmons, aka the demon, his like on stage persona with Kiss, like might make sense given the Dakota's haunted history if one were to take something like that seriously. But I don't know what's wrong with Piano Man Billy Joel. Like,
yeah, how are you going to say no to Billy Joel?
He's not even loud. He's just calming.
Like, I can understand not wanting a party presence like Gene Simmons. But,
right.
Like, he just
Piano Man.
Fucking Piano Man.
Vienna.
Right.
But, hopefully, those who have been approved are okay with the ghosts because this building is full of them. With the earliest story dating back to the 1930s, when allegedly several electricians reported seeing the man with the wig in the basement. This apparition, thought to be Dakota's OG developer, Edward Cabot Clark, is described as a man with a short beard, a large nose, and wire glasses. Quote, each time the man glared fiercely at the electrician for several moments, then reached up, snatched the wig off of his head, and shook it angrily in the electrician's face, unquote.
Can you just imagine, like, just being so pissed off that you're like, I don't even care if you know that I'm balding.
Right.
Fuck you. And just
I'm so mad.
Get out of here.
You make me want to pull my hair out. I'm actually pulling my hair out.
And Clark did indeed wear a toupee, so not only does the description match, but it matches in other ways as well. Though he never actually lived in the building, because he died 2 years before it was completed.
Yeah.
Another fun basement story involves a porter who had experienced a heavy metal bar flying at him. It had apparently landed at his feet, after which it sounds like he ran away. Fair. Later, he went back down to the basement with a resident to show them all of the things that had been moving on their own and was distressed to find out that this bar, which had flown by itself, nearly hitting him, was so heavy that he himself couldn't even lift it.
Oh.
There's no way it could have, like, fell?
No, I think it, like, flew across the room. And he was the only one down there at the time.
Things flying across the room always, like, that is a big point for me.
Yeah.
Because things falling, like, yeah, it could just be that it was precariously for a while and then something moved or shifted wrong. Mm-hmm. When people describe something as flying off the shelves, that's always a big, like, ooh.
Little less chance for, like, a freak accident, like something.
Yeah, especially if it's, like, so heavy that he himself cannot lift it.
Yeah.
In 1965, after the death of actress Judy Holliday, the new tenants in her apartment hired three men to repaint the walls and revarnish the hardwood. Throughout their time in the apartment, the men complained about feeling watched, followed by the appearance of a couple of unexplained entities. The first was of a boy who was about 10 years old, wearing a Buster Brown style suit, which was a style that was popular in the early 1900s. The boy was apparently accompanied by a musty odor.
Ew.
The three also claimed to have seen the apparition of a man, like a fully grown man, with the face of a young child.
I don't like that.
This man, baby, I believe, has been seen by several folks working around the building. Like, throughout the years, everyone just keeps seeing this weird man, baby.
That seems unsettling, like when you use the filter on Snapchat where yes! it makes your face right. look like a child.
I don't like it. No. I'm pretty sure there's some sort of horror movie where there's like the body of an adult man and the face of like a baby, and it just gives me bad vibes. I don't like it.
What about the baby man?
So far, I haven't heard anything about a baby man.
That a Benjamin Button scenario?
A little baby crawls out with a big old man's face like,
I don't like that either. I like to have age-appropriate head and bodies. Let me just say, right off the bat, age-appropriate matching head and bodies. Lastly, after their job was mainly done, these painters, one of them was in doing some like last minute touch-ups in one of the larger closets when suddenly the door slammed shut and the lights went out. He groped his way off the ladder, propped open the door, and turned the light back on when he then suddenly felt something grab his arm. One of the most commonly seen ghosts in the Dakota is that of a little girl. First seen by also some workmen in the early 20th century, she is described as a beautiful blonde child wearing high white stockings, patent leather shoes with silver buckles, and a yellow dress made of taffeta that seems to come from earlier in the 1900s. And she is known to be bouncing a red ball because aren't they always? And it's always red.
I don't like the idea of ghost kids are creepy. Ghost kids are exceptionally creepy.
I always think of Pet Sematary when I think about like a creepy little ghost kid. Like, you want to play with me?
The Shining for me. Yep. Okay. Yep. 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 Yep.
Well, she said to the workman, it's my birthday.
Nope.
And then she just kept on walking and bouncing her ball until she disappeared down the hallway. The description of the girl did not match any of the residents or their guests at the time. She was also seen by a woman in the foyer while waiting for a friend of hers. The little girl walked through the room and went into what the woman had assumed was an adjacent room, though later she found out that it wasn't a room at all. It was a closet, which could be explained by, like, the blueprint theory or, like, the stone tape theory, which is essentially, like, ghosts are just walking the path that they used to walk. And yeah. Since so much construction has been done, there used to maybe be a non-closet there. According to a 2015 article from ABC News, the girl is still seen by residents today, quote, greeting them with a smile and a wave from the lower floor windows. I know you, no ghost children.
Whenever I feel like a creepy presence, like I just try to walk around like I'm the most badass person ever. Like I just like, you don't want to mess
afraid.
With me.
I'm not free.
I ain't scared. I ain't scared of no ghosts.
Just real tough chat.
I ain't scared of no ghosts.
Just tough Chad.
Like, I'd be slamming stuff around, like, oh, you ain't gonna do nothing.
You wanna see how strong I am? Just like a professional wrestler, just.
But also quoting lines from Ghostbusters. I ain't afraid of no ghost.
Yeah, just yelling, like, whoa!
Who you gonna call? Chad.
It's going on the potential episode title list. Who you gonna call?
Chad.
On the third floor of the Dakota, residents Frederick and Suzanne Weinstein, who, from what I saw, have no relation to the bad Weinstein. They have also had their fair share of ghostly activity. One night, while outside the building, Frederick looked up at his apartment and saw a crystal chandelier, lights a-glowing, hanging in his living room. He didn't have a crystal chandelier, so he assumed that while he was out, his wife had had this big old chandelier installed, you know, because super cash, just getting a crystal chandelier installed while you're out on the town. But when he got to his apartment, it was gone. Upon further inspection, he noticed that in the spot where he thought he had seen it, there were bolts and like a base on the ceiling, as if there once upon a time had in fact been a chandelier hung there.
Okay, okay, okay.
And there's like no talk about this guy doing psychedelic drugs at some point.
No, I looked him up and okay. I know his wife was a lawyer. Okay. I think he was a financial guy.
Okay, he's probably like straight-laced.
He sounds pretty straight-laced and boring. Yeah, yeah. The couple also claimed to have heard footsteps and other unexplained noises in their apartment, which, as we know, yeah. The Dakota is pretty quiet. They got a lot of soundproofing. And they also experienced a rearranging of sorts when rugs and furniture would move around on their own.
Furniture we've heard many times before. Rugs is a newish one.
And, like, is there furniture on top of the rugs? Like, how are these getting moved? Are they like trying to do like the table with the tablecloth trick and like
pull it out?
I love that all three of us did that motion at the exact same time. It's like, yeah, that.
I've smashed a glass or two trying to be slick, but
I'm just Chad trying to get those extra tips.
Like, watch this, kids.
Never mind.
Never mind.
Go grab the dustpan real quick.
This is what you don't do. Mm-hmm. It makes a mess, apparently, every single time I try it. One of the most famous ghosts at the Dakota is that of Beatles member John Lennon, who was murdered by Mark David Chapman in the archway of the southern entrance in 1980. After Lennon's death, several people claimed to have seen a spirit at the entrance of the Dakota in 1983 with an eerie glow about him. And Yoko Ono said that he once visited her in their apartment. She saw him sitting at the piano when he turned to look at her and say, "Don't be afraid. I'm still with you."
I don't know how to feel about that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it could be like maybe she's like half dreaming or, you know.
Like just wanting, like the fans potentially seeing him or like people potentially seeing him downstairs. Yes. But like, yeah, her seeing him feels more like maybe she wanted to see him. But that doesn't mean it didn't happen, I guess. Like, it's just. Right.
It could be the real deal.
But you know what? As long as she feels that way.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Or maybe she got a new boyfriend. He's like, "I'm still watching you.
I'm still with you."
You better not.
As we have learned, turns out John Lennon was not nice to his partners.
No.
So it really could go either way.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. And Yoko Ono actually remained at the Dakota until just last year. She moved out in 23. I think so.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
I know. Prior to his death, John Lennon claimed to have seen several odd things himself, including what he described as the crying lady ghost in the hallway, which apparently other residents have also seen as well. But he very publicly was like, yeah, crying lady ghost in the Dakota. And although it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the Dakota specifically, I know Kayla would also want to know about the UFO he saw from his apartment balcony.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes. UFOs. This is going to be the first UFO thing that Brittany has talked about.
No,
Brittany
UFO?
Doesn't talk about the aliens. I talk about the aliens.
Okay. Yeah. And this is basically, I just straight up quoted this from the website BeatlesStory.com. Quote, on the 23rd of August, 1974, John claimed to have seen a UFO moving slowly over his New York City apartment. The claim, which came in the middle of John's famous 18-month-long lost weekend period, was backed by his girlfriend, May Pang, and by other residents of the city. May explained that John was lying in bed and decided to go out onto the balcony for a cigarette on a summer's evening. As he was smoking, he noticed odd lights flashing, and as he turned, he saw this silent, circular object, dark in color and adorned with white pulsing lights around the rim with one red light on top. Standing on the balcony, naked and in shock,
We've all been there, John. Naked and in shock.
John shouted for May to come and confirm the sighting. She later wrote that the large circular object was overhead with no noise. I started yelling, "It's a UFO!" She described that it was two or three stories above them and just cleared the rooftop of the next building. The saucer crawled past at a slow pace before turning sideways and floating down the river. Then it hovered above a building before heading toward Brooklyn. After stopping short over a bridge, it flew upward into the sky. The sighting came just after John had finished work on the album Walls and Bridges, and he added a note in the inner sleeve that read, "On the 23rd of August, 1974, at 9 o'clock, I saw a UFO." The event was referenced to in the lyrics, "The UFO's over New York, and I ain't too surprised," in John's song "Nobody Told Me," which was released posthumously in 1984, unquote.
So, if he was naked on his patio, was he like a drinker, druggy kind of guy?
Or he loved drugs.
Lennon loved drugs.
And I mean, that's where I kind of saw it.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah.
A lot of people said that the reason why they kind of consider it to be more realistic is because May was there and May was like, "This is exactly what happened." So their stories were also matching, but she probably also did drugs.
Also, of all the things, like, as if I remember correctly, because again, I did learn way too much about the Beatles in high school. Like, he wasn't an alien guy.
No.
Like, Lennon wasn't somebody who was trying to talk about aliens. He wasn't a
conspiracy nut.
Yeah.
He's no Dan Aykroyd.
No Tom DeLonge.
Yeah.
No Tom DeLonge. But no, like, so he wasn't, like, he had his own things, his own issues, but aliens wasn't really one of them.
I mean, I know nothing about the Beatles other than.
Apparently he was a believer after.
Yeah. Yeah. He wrote about it. He sang about it. Throughout the years, many celebrities and notable figures have claimed to have experienced a variety of paranormal activity at the Dakota, but I think Maury Povich, who has had an apartment there with his wife Connie Chung for years, sums it up nicely when he describes the Dakota as being, quote-unquote, very haunted.
I love Maury.
The end.
I love Maury Povich so much. Maury was my friend after school for so long. I learned so much from Maury Povich.
I liked Maury. Yeah. Maury was good.
I will tell you, he had some allegations against him.
Damn it!
I mean, I'm not saying he was a good person. I'm saying I like to watch him on TV.
Yeah, me too.
God damn it!
It was eventually dropped, but it sounds like an NDA was signed.
I just can't love anything in the world.
Not men. No.
We can like Chad.
Sorry.
Chad's fine.
No. You know, I always try my best because I care about everybody. And
Yep.
God. We have a lot of really good friends.
I thought Maury was fun. God fucking. You know what? Also, if we're going to go with just like straight celebrities, people we don't know, if nothing else, we've got Weird Al Yankovic.
Yes. Historically, really good dude.
There's a TikToker that like has a whole series of like, is this person you like a creep? And then they like deep dive into everything. And she'll literally do this thing where she's like, "All right, so here's what I found." And it's like, she's like, "Well, this is a bunch of crap." Or there's some minor things. But when she did Weird Al, she's like, "I could not find a single goddamn thing."
Yeah. Yeah.
So we got Weird Al.
That's impressive.
Yep.
Right? Right?
All right. So the Dakota.
The Dakota.
I'm going to give, on the skeptic scale, I'm going to give the Dakota a 4.5.
Ooh, I'm also going to give it a 4.5.
What do you think?
I'm going to give it a 4 because I can't choose the same as y'all. Like, I feel like
I mean, you could go up to 5. I'm just
Nope. So you're saying there's something going on, but not necessarily like
I am a skeptic over here, so.
Oh. You're much better than Corey was.
I at least
got
to give him that one percent.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. I agree. I you know, and our scale is completely arbitrary.
Yeah, yeah. No, we it's completely dependent on how we're feeling in that moment.
Yep.
So, Chad.
Yep.
Chad, I understand that you might have some stories to tell us, including the fact that you might have. Ooh. You got to give a tiny bit about your background for the listeners who don't know.
Okay.
But I understand that you might have come back haunted.
My ex-wife believe I when I got out of my service and I was going through my things, she swore that lights would come on and stuff like that, and then like she felt like something was followed me home.
Yep.
And I, of course, when I was over in I was in the Army from 02 to 09. 3.5 years of active service, and then the rest was National Guard service. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you got to sign up for whatever you sign up for, and did 7, got out, cool. When I was in Iraq, I remember going to we used to do convoy security, and mostly convoy security, but we did a couple of patrols, and one time we had to go up to this place, I could be wrong, but I think it was called Stryker, and we got put at this Iraqi Army old base, and it was like this beat down building around Tent City. Like, nothing was nice around there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we walk in here, they're like, this is where you're sleeping tonight. We walk in the door, it's a long hallway, and we're like, just walking down this hallway, and we're like, where's the doors to the rooms? Literally, these doors of these rooms were part of the wall.
Oh.
We found out later that we had to pull out, like, the whole wall would open up into these different corridors of this building that we were in. And there was, like, literally, like, just blood stains all over the floor.
Ugh.
The beds were nasty. I didn't want to sleep there. I didn't feel comfortable.
I'm guessing nobody wanted to sleep there.
We're like, what's going on here?
Right. Why here?
I don't think I might have passed out because I was so tired because we were doing, like, on a long mission or whatever. But I definitely had my 9mm loaded underneath my pillow. I'm like, I didn't feel peaceful.
Yeah, that sounds awful.
Any moment, like, a ghost is going to, like, stab me or, you know.
Yeah.
Throw an unbelievably heavy pipe at you.
You know, I don't remember if I heard mortars that night, but it's pretty common that people are trying to mortar, you know, the soldiers that were over there and everything like that. So it just didn't feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Needless to say, there was a couple weird moments. Me and a buddy, like, got home from a mission. It was, like, a kind of a rough mission. We didn't get hit, but the convoy next to us got hit. Mm. And we were just kind of feeling it, and, like, we had to pull security and everything. And we saw the supposed eyes in the sky, like the weird ghostly,
like orbs kind of
like
thing.
Orbs in the sky, and it was like a clear night, and that's all the only cloud thing that was out there, and it Ugh. Felt really weird. It felt euphoric, you know, like you're like, holy crap, like this is actually right here, right now,
right.
And I don't know, it was a special moment that time. To see the eyes in the sky that people talk about or whatever. But I came home. I was maybe cursed myself because after you live that life, it's not 100% mm-hmm. easy.
No, oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I had my own issues, especially right when I got done with all my stuff. And PTSD, going through all the trying to get help and just trying to figure it all out when you get back to the civilian world. And my ex-wife used to just swear that there was some kind of, like, weird presence that I brought home with me that wasn't there before.
Oh, yeah.
So.
From what I understand, like, a lot of people that come back from serving overseas end up having, I guess, whether or not you believe it's haunted. I mean, everybody has their own emotional issues,
trauma
that, like, different problems and stuff that get attributed with that. But, like, you are not the first story I've heard of where somebody came back and they're like, oh, weird things are occurring yep. that have nothing to do with anything I'm actually doing.
Not to mention, I really struggle with alcohol as to kind of like numb myself when I first got home really, really
yeah.
bad.
Mm-hmm.
And there was like definitely a darkness inside of me as well. And I was not abusive or anything, but like, you know, we grew apart pretty much immediately when I got out.
I mean, yeah, you went through an entire lifetime.
And she was like a, you know, kind of that country girl, super nice girl in her own way. You know, we're over it now. We get along. We got beautiful kids together. And I just don't feel like she could really, empathize or she
empathize,
obviously
can't,
she can't feel what I'm going through.
I think that, you can hear it a lot. If, by the way, Sea Silence has a lot of stuff.
I have a lot of different, projects coming up. I have, something around Halloween. I'm going to drop something called Vlad Aaron Brown. It's a projection of myself in the respect of kind of being like a vampire, but it's just like story-based. I'm a real conceptual writer. Me and Montclair have another follow-up album coming, Two Sheeple. We don't know if we're going to call it Sheeple 2 or not. Of course, Boogeyman 5-3.
Yep.
And I want to start really putting some time in and just releasing singles to like perform live.
I love that.
And also me and A-Dub have another EP coming up called Good as Gold, which also was the title of a Big Into's
last video.
And I was like, I had to ask the blessing, like, can we still use the title? They're like, man, we can share a title. He's like, some country singer used it already. So we're like, all right.
But you can actually hear like what you're talking about, like from coming back to now. Like if you listen to all of your releases going back to like 2010, 2011,
yes. Mm-hmm.
You can hear the difference. From then to now.
I have a lot of songs that I still perform to this day that I wrote before I went, things I wrote after I went, and just life after the fact. And it's just kind of like my self-expression, the way I get it out, my poetry. I like to write my rap songs.
Well, even if you are haunted, you do not exude haunted energy. You exude happy, lovey, light energy, if that makes you feel any better.
I feel good. Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, I feel like anybody who knows me, they call me Chad Dad because I'm so fertile or whatever. you know, Chad Dad, Sea Silence. But I feel like I'm a big brother to people. Like, I'm legit, got people's back.
Yeah.
I'm not gentrifying or treating women differently than I treat men or, you know.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
I agree. Was it the movie Shudder with?
Shudder has Joshua Jackson in it.
Yes. It just reminds me of that because in Shudder, I mean, Joshua Jackson, he kills a girl. But basically, he goes through his life and it's like his neck starts really hurting and everything. And it's because the girl's ghost is sitting on his shoulders and he's like being weighed down by it. And as you were talking about your thing, I'm like, oh, yeah, just like,
I haven't watched it yet. I just picked it up.
Oh, you've never watched it?
I just picked it up from River City Records today.
Okay, well, watch it and then.
Good movie though. I don't think I've seen it yet either.
It's okay. It's a horror movie.
I'll watch it.
I love horror. So
yeah. I'll watch it and then I'll borrow it to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we'll reconvene and you guys.
Is it on DVD or is it on Blu-ray or
DVD?
Okay, excellent.
Awesome. Awesome.
Oh my goodness, this is amazing. I just love happy finally having, we've been talking about having Chad here, like off microphone.
Record, yeah.
We've been talking about having Chad on for like over a year. So.
Yeah, even if we didn't mention it too, we were talking about it.
No, we were talking about it too. Okay. Like it's been a conversation several times.
Like in passing, if we run into each other, yeah.
Because Chad, I'd run into Chad out and about and he'd be like, I got some stories. And I'm like, well, let's figure this shit out.
Let's do it.
So it has been super duper awesome to have you.
Yeah.
Happy to be here. Y'all are awesome. I love you both. You rock.
We love you. Oh my God. Because this is going to be the last episode before Homegrown, we will have an episode for you during Homegrown that we're going to record earlier.
In a couple days. Yeah.
But because this is the last episode before Homegrown, just a quick reminder that send in your DMs for trying to win the wristbands. If you don't, you can still pick them up at pretty much any Homegrown venue if you are a Duluth resident. Homegrown runs from Sunday, April 28th to Sunday, May 5th, and you will catch all of us out and about. If you do, please come say hi because we love you and we want to know that you love us and make sure you catch Chad's performances.
Sea Silence, Thursday at Earth Rider Fest Grounds, Friday at Dublin's.
Yes.
And you can look it up in the festival. Go to the website, Music Homegrown Festival. You'll figure it out. Duluth, Minnesota.
The festival.
Here's one question that people are going to, like, will festival work? Or does it have to have an S in there?
Oh, no. You can say festival.
You can say festival.
Okay. Festival. Mm-hmm.
You can say festival.
It's encouraged.
You won't get an extra entry, but you will get a laugh. You will get an absolute laugh out of me, and then I will probably promptly share that with Chad.
Yes. How many people say festival?
Festival. Yeah. Incredible. If you have a listener story you'd like to submit, you can do so by emailing us directly, leftofskeptic@gmail.com. You can also visit our website, www.leftofskeptic.com, and click the listener stories tab at the top of the page. You can also get there by clicking the link tree in our bio. We just ask that you please include your pronouns. You can choose to include your name or not, depending on what you're comfortable with. If you want to be anonymous, we're cool with that too.
You can also follow us on social media. We are on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at Left of Skeptic and Facebook at Left of Skeptic Podcast.
Chad, are you ready for the, are you about ready for the okay bye time? Because it's almost there. You got to say it with us though.
I'm ready. We have to do it at the same time.
Yeah. Yep.
We want to thank you all for joining us this spooky Wednesday. We love and appreciate you.
It's true. We do.
Happy spooky Wednesday.
Happy spooky Wednesday. Okay. Bye.
Mama, mommy, who's that?
You want to know who this is, huh? I got a little hint for you. Surprise! Hey, check your closet, check your bed, check your bed again. It's the Boogeyman. The spooky sounds are running through your head. Hey, who you gonna call?
Silence.
A tall, fertile man is lying in your bed. Who you gonna call?
Say silence.
Hey, I ain't afraid of no ghosts. Nah, check it, listen. I ain't afraid of no ghosts. Mustard makes me feel good.
Left of Skeptic podcast is written and hosted by Kayla Moria and Brittany Lind. This week's episode is edited by me, Brittany Lind. The Left of Skeptic music is by Dave Melling and Emily Havoc, and our artwork is by Al LeBlanc. Okay, bye!